The Fetzer Broadcasting Company presents Western Michigan at Work. Each week at this time, station WKZO brings its listeners the story of one of the industries of this area where you may find Western Michigan at work. These programs tell how the people of Western Michigan earn their living, brings you a description of the business enterprises which provide them jobs, and brings to the microphone representative workers of all kinds of occupations. Tonight our story is about the Watervliet Paper Company of Watervliet, Michigan. And here is your guide, Dr. Willis Dunbar.
Good evening. Near the fish hatchery west of Kalamazoo, a stream called the Pawpaw River has its source. It winds its way across the countryside of western Michigan to the big lake at St. Joseph. Before it gets there, it has become quite a stream. 50 or 60 years ago, the water power from such a stream constituted an attraction to industries to locate along the banks, and especially a paper mill, for a paper mill uses a great deal of water and power in the manufacture of its product. It was because of its location on the Kalamazoo River that Kalamazoo became a papermaking center. Back in 1867, the first paper mill was established here. In due course, mills were established further down the river at Otsego and Plainwell. Others were built on the St. Joseph River over at Three Rivers and White Pigeon. It is not surprising, therefore, that about the same time this paper manufacturing expansion was going on in the Kalamazoo Valley and in the St. Joseph River Valley, some enterprising men should take a look at the Pawpaw River as a site for a paper mill. They appeared in the year 1892 in the persons of William E. Sims and George E. Dudley. Sims was born in Maine and started his papermaking career in that state when he was only 15 years of age. Later on, he moved to Holyoke, Massachusetts, where he became superintendent in due course of a large mill. Sims was a first-class color man, and the first to issue a sample book of standard covers, or colored mediums, as they were then called. George E. Dudley started as a clerk in a paper mill and became associated with Sims in the Crocker Manufacturing Company as director of sales and accounting. The two men became partners in 1881 and organized a book paper mill in Holyoke. They found that much of their sales were in Chicago. For that reason, they decided to sell out and build a mill closer to the Chicago market. They hit upon Watervliet because that town was on the Pawpaw River, apparently had ample water power, and was also on a direct railroad to Chicago, the Pier Marquette, now a branch of the Chesapeake in Ohio. This town was originally known as Shingle Diggins on account of the large industry established there during pioneer days for the manufacture of split and hand-shaved shingles, made largely from poplar and Michigan pine. In 1892, Sims and Dudley started construction of their new factory on the site of an old sawmill. Difficulties were encountered at once. Available water power did not live up to expectations. More land had to be purchased, and an extensive steam power plant had to be built to give sufficient mill power. The Watervliet Paper Company still uses some water power, but of course it's only a very small part of the power needed. The water used in the papermaking process also comes from wells. The mill, representing an original investment of $250,000, went into operation in 1894. It was equipped with six 2,000-pound beaters and a 116-inch Fourdrinier machine, and made book, envelope, and writing papers. It appears to have been operated profitably for a brief time, but it did not live up to expectations. The workers lacked the skill that Sims and Dudley were accustomed to in paper workers of the East. They often laid off during the early summer to pick berries, we're told. On top of that, Sims incurred a serious injury. So in 1899, the partners sold out to a large company owning several mills, the American Writing Paper Company. The mill was operated thereafter for 6 years, and then in 1905, it was shut down, dismantled, and the equipment was shipped to other mills. Watervliet had lost its one important industry. The buildings lay idle for about 5 years. Then in 1910, a group of Kalamazoo men organized a company called the Watervliet Paper Company, and they acquired the buildings. Prominent in this enterprise were W.S. Hodges, formerly of the Superior Paper Company, A.B. Scheid, Charles B. Hayes, and J.B. Balch. They installed four large beaters and a 136-inch Fourdrinier machine. The revamped mill made book, lithograph, folder, and map papers. In 1912, a coating mill was built, and in 1928, a second Fourdrinier machine was installed, bringing production up to more than 60 tons per day. George K. Ferguson, president and general manager of the company, came with the company in 1914. He attended Kalamazoo College and today is president of the board of trustees of that institution. And incidentally, Mr. Ferguson last week was named chairman of the Book Paper Manufacturers Association, which includes about 50 book paper mills all over the country. Under his management, the Watervliet Paper Company has operated steadily over a 19-year period. Stockholders down through the years have averaged about a 4% return on their investment. The highest rate of dividend paid to stockholders has represented a 4.8% return on invested capital. The balance of the profit, when there has been a profit, has gone into buying more equipment and replacing worn out or obsolete items. The Watervliet Paper Company today has sales exceeding $5 million a year. It gives employment to about 430 people. Watervliet itself is a town of only about 1,200 population. Some of the workers live in nearby communities. A number own small farms where they cultivate berries or truck crops. Watervliet is a nice place to live. It's only an hour's drive from large shopping centers and about 3 hours from Chicago's Loop. There are lots of lakes nearby for recreation and amusement. Schools are modern in every respect. There's a fine park near the mill and an athletic field named for Charles B. Hayes, who is still active on the company's board of directors. The company aids substantially in all worthy community undertakings. Recently, for example, the community set out to obtain a hospital. The Watervliet Paper Company, to advance that worthy project, pledged half of the necessary $65,000. This indicates how closely the mill and the town live together. Well, now suppose we take a jaunt through the mill. Our guide is Jack Beyerwaltes. We learn that the Watervliet Paper Company makes only what is called book paper. Now that's one of the fine papers, the other kinds being bond paper and cover paper. The product of the mill is used for a variety of purposes. I saw a fine deck of cards made out of Watervliet paper. The paper for the cover of your New Yorker magazine was made in Watervliet. The label on that package of chewing gum that you bought this afternoon very possibly was made in Watervliet. The paper for the catalog describing your new car may have been made in Watervliet. Coated book papers, uncoated offset, and coated one-side label papers are the products made by the company. The largest market for these papers is in Chicago. Most of the sales, which are made through jobbers, go to points within a 300 or 400 mile radius by rail or truck. Raw materials consist of pulp, which comes in sheets. Some 80% of this pulp is produced in North America, and about 20% at present is imported from abroad. You might be interested in the fact that a car of pulp weighs about 100,000 pounds. Pulps differ from one another. Watervliet uses a rather long-fibered pulp of the sulfite type. This gives the papers their strength. They make a sort of a skeleton for the sheet. Then a sort of filler fiber derived from top grades of used papers are mixed in to make the sheet smooth and printable and to give it more body. I saw a dozen or so women sorting out magazines, discarding some of the ones printed on poorer paper and throwing the others on a belt conveyor. These are then softened, cooked, screened, treated, and washed through an intricate maze of operations. The pulp joins this short-fibered material in the beaters. As these different fibers, suspended in water, circulate through the beaters, moisture is worked into the fibers, making them stick together when the paper is formed. A little refined clay is added to give the sheet smoothness and body. The next step is refining. Here, the average fiber length can be finally adjusted. Now, at this point in our trip, we meet Bob Carmody, who is a machine tender. Bob is here with us in the studio, and I'd like to have our listeners meet him. Bob, how long have you been with the Watervliet Paper Company?
About 30 years.
Just what does a machine tender do, Bob?
The machine tender is in charge of running the paper machine and the machine crews. He personally adjusts it for the different weights and formations of the paper being made. It would probably take me a half a day to tell you all the things that a machine tenner has to do.
Those are the machines where the paper is dried out, right?
Yes, sir.
Does it take long to learn how to be a machine tender, Bob?
About 5 years, but a machine tender job is not always available.
I hear, Bob, that your wife also works in the mill. What does she do?
That's right. She is in charge of the girls who sort and inspect the paper.
And about yourself, Bob, are you a native of Waterbleed?
That's right.
What do you find to do when you aren't working? Be careful now.
Mostly, I like to take it easy. But I follow football and baseball, and I get quite a kick out of model railroading. But my next big job is helping the wife with her spring house cleaning.
You aren't alone there, Bob. Well, thanks for being on our program. Now, after the paper is made, it's tested in a control laboratory. We see numerous gadgets which scientifically test the paper's bonding strength, ash content, bursting strength, density, tearing strength, and sizing. That's how fast the fibers soak up moisture. The coating mill is our next stop. There we see the paper coated with selected and refined clays and an adhesive or glue and water. After the coating is applied, the paper has to be dried. And the company is presently installing the first of three new coating machines to replace 9 older type coaters. The 3 new machines will have a somewhat larger capacity than the 9 old ones. Altogether, the company is spending about $1 million in a modernizing program which includes re-equipping the coating mill and rebuilding one of the paper machines. And incidentally, it cost almost 1.5 times as much to rebuild that machine as the machine itself cost when it was new in 1928. After the paper is coated, it's calendered. As the coated paper passes through the huge rolls of the calendar stacks, a high glossy surface is ironed on the paper. This is not merely for the sake of appearance. Modern photo engraving with fine half-tone screens requires paper with a high glossy surface for high fidelity reproduction. When the paper comes from the coating mill, it's again subjected to inspection in another control laboratory. We meet at this point Mrs. Isla Hawks, who is in the coating mill control laboratory as a technician. Mrs. Hawks is also with us for this broadcast. You've been with the company quite a while, too, haven't you, Mrs. Hawks?
I shouldn't tell you this, but I have worked at the mill ever since 1913.
I won't tell a soul, Mrs. Hawks. Tell us, what are the nature of the tests you conduct?
We test the paper mainly for the amount of coating, the strength of the coating, and its gloss.
Are you a native of Waterbleed, too, Mrs. Hawks?
Yes.
You know, Mrs. Hawks, I was born and brought up in Hartford, about 5 miles east of Waterbleed. My mother, who still lives there, has a neighbor, Merle Haney, who drives back and forth to Waterbleed to work in the mill. Are there quite a few people in the mill who live in nearby towns or out in the country?
Oh, yes, quite a few.
I suppose Waterbleed's a good place to live.
Yes, Dr. Dernbar, I've always thought so.
By the way, Mrs. Hawks, they tell me you're quite an ardent fisherman. Where do you catch the big ones?
I shouldn't tell you this either, but I've had pretty good luck on Sherwood's Bay in Pawpaw Lake.
Well, thank you very much. I'll remember that. And thank you for being with us, Mrs. Hawks. The final process that we see in our trip through the mill is the cutting of the paper from the big rolls into sheets of absolutely uniform size. These sheets are then inspected one at a time by skilled women. And then, believe it or not, they are counted by hand. No satisfactory machine counter has yet been devised. Then they are cased and ready for shipment. That completes our story of the Waterbleed Paper Company, another industry where you will find Western Michigan at work.
For the next 2 weeks, Western Michigan at Work will not be heard at the usual time. On April 6th, we will bring to our listeners a special Army Day broadcast. On April 13th, a special message from the Educational Committee of the American Legion. Our next program in this series will be broadcast at the same time and will bring you the story of the Lee Paper Company of Vicksburg. This has been another broadcast presented in the public interest by the Fetzer Broadcasting Company.